Well, one of my observations coming out of all of this is the types of people who are actually contributing to this discussion. I'm hearing voices that I don't normally hear. I'm hearing a lot of females who are concerned about it. And you can tell that people from across a broad spectrum of this society are involved in this discussion, and I hope that those who have to make decisions will listen and recognize that, what has been put on the table so far isn't really considered good enough as it relates to trying to confront this problem. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. Down to Brass Tacks. It's 1:40 in the afternoon. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. My name, not my name. I am calling on behalf of the GIS problem. And I want to say three little things. First, I want to mention that I'm 62 years old, and at 16, I tried to kill myself because of the situation in my home. Not abuse sexually or anything like that, but other things that a child goes through. And I want the heads of government and the nation to recognize that the children have problems. Yes, I have been there, and we have problems. When a parent and a father and mother separate, we tend to crawl inside. The mother seems to take out on the child, and the father wants responsibility. Nobody listens. When I say nobody listens, they listen not to what the child have to say. They say you're too young. You don't have a say. Nothing matters. And what is going on now in society, we as people tends to bury ourselves, bury our heads in the sand and don't look around. We say about role models. We say about helping the children. But when things come out, then the children have to bear. If the children have to talk about all they go through, nobody would believe. But we as adults need to take time out to listen to our children, get to know our children. My question.
Let me ask you before you get to your question, based on your experience, how long ago was that when you decided you attempted suicide?
I'm 62 years old, and I did that around 16.
Right. How did you progress in life after that?
Well, sir, I had a little counseling. And it was kind of rough because I felt that I was nobody cares. But progressing, I became a Christian, which was an up and down scale. I found work. I began to work at 17. I have two kids, grands, and coming up mostly was based on church. Most of my life was in church. Now I'm a minister within a church. I counsel people. I see things. I hear things. My progress was hard, and I make it. Sometimes I ask God, how long must I go through? But they always get answers like, it's patient. You got patience. You got to run this race. But saying that, and a child don't have nobody they could talk to. Me having counsel, sometimes you talk to your psychologist. Mine, she listened to me. She get the party involved, the issues was having around them involved. You have to write out how you feel, and then you will tell them to your face. But some of us parents don't like to listen into their
Got that.
society.
Understood. But what I want to get from you is, how did that negative experience work for or against you when it came to bringing up your children and interacting with your grandchildren?
Well, it worked for me in a positive way because I was able I bring myself to get to know, I have two boys, get to know my boys, get to know the issues, the anger. To be honest with you, I even push them to the limit because I can see what they are. I get to know them. I get them to talk to me. But they always remember the respect due. I let them speak their mind, but they got to know how far to go with it. And then if I have to lash them, I all sit down and talk to them and explain to them why. So it became helpful to me, a foundation, whereas that I will know what not to do when I had my kids. My grands is the same way.
Would you encourage your children to flog the grandchildren now?
Sometimes, yes, I will. Sometimes. You don't have to do it on a regular basis, because sometimes when my son is beaten, I have two favorites. But when my son is beaten, I always ask why. And I say, don't you think you can find another way, some other way of doing, correcting the child? If you have to beat her, please don't beat in a manner that, you know, she's small, she might not understand. But you lash her when you speak to her, because I always tell you, you have two ears to hear. And if what is those ears for? They say to hear. I say, so why are you not listening? One lash, go sit down. You got to know how, when, and why. Beating a child today, they don't always conform the same time. Sometimes they resent you, and sometimes they take it in a good frame of mind, accept it. But you have to be able to balance. In this society, yes, I don't have nothing against flogging children, but not to a cruel way. When they reach the age of 14, 15, 16, you've got to find other ways. Because they come now a teenager going into adult. So you've got to modify that and find ways and means of punishing a child.
Why, how would you respond to my suggestion that perhaps you should start that modification earlier? You shouldn't wait until they become a teenager.
I do agree with that, yes, because some children, not every child is alike. That's why I say you have to get to know your child. Each child is different. You've got to get to know them. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not well-educated, but you've got to get to know your child. If you have problems in the home, you've got to get to know your child. Because with my kids, if anything happens, I sit down and explain to them. I talk to them. I show respect in front of them. So I demand that respect. And I could be your friend. You could share anything. To this day, my boys still share any and everything with me. Even my nephews and my nieces, which I have many of.
Okay. Thank you very much for your contribution. It's 1:47. This is Down to Brass Tacks, going into the home stretch of the program today. Hello. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air. Proceed. We can hear you. People really are against this whole question of corporal punishment. And as we discussed earlier, it seemed to have been a point of some division when it came up at the government industrial school. There are a lot of Barbadians who believe that if you spare the rod, you're going to spoil the child. And totally resent the idea that they should be prohibited or discouraged from flogging children. I suppose there are some things that you hold back as last resorts, all depending upon the child. So for me, it is a last resort. It is something that may kick in depending upon whether a child does something that's particularly dangerous to itself or to others or something like that. But in the main, I think we really need to move away from that as much as possible. And the real difficulty in bringing up these children is that it takes more time and effort to try the other methods. And sometimes people don't want to put in that effort. And so they resort naturally to this whole concept of beating children I support the view that using corporal punishment with the kind of frequency that I've seen it when I was growing up as a child, and the degree to which I sometimes still see it on the streets and that sort of thing, it helps to create this notion that the best way to solve a problem is by violence. That's I believe very strongly that is what it does. Anyhow, let me hear your thoughts. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, this is Danielle. Can you hear me?
I'm not hearing you well enough. You said this is who?
This is Danielle. So I'm calling
you
on behalf
need to
of
identify
the
yourself.
System Education
yeah.
Foundation. Mm-hmm. Okay. We are a foundation based in the U.S., and I am the director of research. We heard about what happened at the industrial government school, and we were actually very appalled at the situation. Our CEO is from Barbados, and so we were just very interested into what's going on. And we feel that like there's an issue before these girls get into the school, and also, you know, during their stay at the school. Before, we're talking about the class issue that leads to most of these teenagers being in detention, which has to be addressed. But what we do realize is that most of these girls did not have a proper court. They did not have access to a proper court system. They did not have access to proper lawyers. And I'm saying girls because we're talking about a girl who was currently abused. But I'm guessing also the boys in the school have these issues.
How can an organization like yours help? How can an organization like yours assist?
Well, we are trying to assist in maybe advocating about this right now, and trying to bring the issue up outside of Barbados, hoping that it would help.
To bring it up outside of Barbados?
International.
Because we...
Why is that?
Yeah.
Is at the end of the day, we have a problem in Barbados that needs to be addressed. Tell us how, in your judgment, raising it internationally and will make that kind of difference.
Well, we'd also like to see, I mean, we watched the press conference I think it was Saturday, a day ago, and
yes.
We were really insulted. You know, there were three men, Mr. Abraham, and the acting principal of the school, and then there was a psychiatrist who was also a man, you know, and we have a government in Barbados where it's the first time we have a female prime minister plus a female governor general and so many females in parliament representing our citizens right now. And I have not heard from any one of them, you know, we have not heard from any one of them about this issue, you know, in terms of representing these girls, the representation for the girls, and trying to find solutions to this problem.
You do take into consideration that the perpetrators of the ill treatment are not necessarily men. And that is another dimension to this that, you know, I would not be surprised if that is glossed over. But
it may not be men, but this is an issue pertaining to the mistreatment of girls. You know,
I know full well how this thing stacks up. My view is that you also have to take into consideration that in this instance, the people who are at the center of this bad treatment are females who have also been conditioned in a particular way. I mean, you know, we've heard us talk a lot about what we see in this country in terms of how some women bring up their children. They curse them very badly. They're very hostile to them. They beat them in public. We see all of that. And that says to me, that within the institution,
the training and the retraining
is important there, but we also have to look at it on a wider scale within the society as well.
No, those same mothers have probably been also abused by, you know, their fathers, you know, reverend.
Whatever we do, we got to take responsibility, you know. This thing about basically shifting things away from yourself to the other people, that's not going to work. If we do not come to terms with who and what we are, you're going to find that this is going to continue. So whether it's male or female, you got to deal with both.
I asked you a question just now.
What do you hope to achieve by raising this particular incident internationally?
What we hope to achieve is to have this mother treated with all the attention that it deserves.
All the attention that it deserves. Really is. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and I understand the point you're raising when you say we have to look at each other. I say male and female are the issue here, and they might as well be. But earlier you were talking about colonialism and everything that, how culture and traditions and everything has been created, has been transforming people and creating this sort of animosity against, which is actually affecting a girl right now, affecting girls and women at this center. If we want to go back to that issue, whether it's male or female, it is a conditioning that is affecting all of them. So we have to look at what we can do as a whole. It does not matter. It happens in Barbados today, but it can happen in Nigeria tomorrow.
But you know, the point is, you people like you, you set up, you have this special Shirley Chisholm body, you told me, operating out of the United States. Shirley Chisholm, as I might recall, it had Beijing connections. Therefore, one would expect that one of the critical things you would be seeking to do is to have some intervention at this level, because you could name and shame Barbados abroad, and perhaps it needs a little bit of that. But at the end of the day, we still have to work on the problem at this end. And organizations like yours out of the United States with a deep interest in what is happening here may be able to assist in a different way. That's the point I want to make.
Well, we are based in the U.S., but you're also working in Barbados.
Okay, so what are you doing in Barbados?
We want to also address the $10,000 fine that was placed on the child. We thought that was, the child is ADHD, and her mother and grandmother had to pay $10,000 to have her released on bail, and we thought that was punitive in itself.
So what are you going to do about it? Well, how can you help?
How do you want us to help?
Well, you should ask the parents that then. It's not for me to give you the answer to that. But thank you very much for your interest in this particular subject. I mean, most of today's program is dominated by it. And I think it speaks to the fact that many people consider it to be particularly important and something that we can't sweep under the carpet. So I hope that you found the discussion useful and that we will look at it from as many possible angles, and ultimately that something significant is going to be done to change the plight of those people who are afflicted by this kind of situation at the GIS and elsewhere in Barbados. Thanks, John Stout, the technical operator and producer. And I'm David Ellis. You have a great afternoon.